Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
The Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Great to have you here today. We didn't talk as much about Donald J. Trump, what he's talking about this morning. So I want to get to that. I'll begin with that. As President Trump was, he called into and spoke to CNBC talking really about all things economic. And that's just it. This is a big push by President Trump as he's concerned about the economy and about the spin, the narrative. As clearly the Trump administration feels that they're raking in the dough in an unprecedented way, and yet the media continues to speak negatively and make people, you know, fear what's to come, fear and worry about consumer spending, and that impacts then your spending, right? So let's go through this. As President Trump, first of all, you know, he's talking about the economy. He's talking about who he's going to choose his candidates for the next Fed chair. So he is already now really undermining Jerome Powell. He calls him too late, but he's done with Jerome Powell, who obviously in his first administration, Trump, this was his choice. And then as says, Powell did pretty well during his administration, but was surprised that Biden sort of re-upped that contract under the Biden administration. Now Trump has to deal with Jerome Powell through, you know, early next year. So he's already talking about those candidates remaining. Former Governor Kevin Warsh, Kevin Hassett, who you heard from yesterday. He was speaking out a lot. And on the Sunday shows, that's the National Economic Council director and then a key Trump advisor. But as far as you may say, well, what about Scott Bessent? Somebody who is very well liked, is the Treasury Secretary right now. So Trump spoke out on Squawk Box how he loves Scott, but listen in.
Don't have them yet. Setting it up now.
Okay, he's setting that up now. So that's all right. President Trump speaking out, telling CNBC just this morning, just moments ago, really, that he talked about this his short list to replace the current Fed, you know, Fed chair. This is the leader of the Fed chair, who he calls too late, if you will. And so this follows news of the Fed governor, Adriana Kugler. This was a surprise announcement. I told you about this, that she just said that she was resigning effective this coming up Friday. And that took a lot of people by surprise. So he has this job opening. They call them the governor. Whenever they talk about a governor in this regard, not like a governor of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro, it always reminds me of my dad. Back in the day, my mom, Rosemary, had a lead foot. And he put all of a sudden she said, Richard, I can't go any faster than 55. And he said, you can't. And so she was complaining. Finally, he admitted he put a governor on. He installed, because my dad could do everything that was, you know, that's why I grew up believing that all men can fix pretty much everything. Because my dad put in a bathroom, fixed the car, put in a new window, plumbing, electric, he could do it all. My brother's the same way, my unk, my grandparent, my grandfather's, not so much with my husband, Larry Menti. When I married Lair Bear, I thought, oh, well, men can, you guys, can, like you're wired, you can fix everything, not so much, but when I think of governor, I always think of my dad, because he put that governor on my mom's vehicle, meaning it prevented her from speeding. And so when you think of a governor in this regard, it's such a perfect term for somebody who's on in a financial sense. So somebody that would stop you basically from overspending. That's what they're there for, right? That they're going to stop you from speeding or prevent you from going over the limit, let's just say. So when you think about the Fed, they're not independent from government, but they're independent within government, right? We've talked about that a lot. So this is the Fed Board of Governors, and now Trump has an opportunity now because of this resignation of one of the Fed governors, Adriana Kugler, he now has an opportunity to add one of his own, another one of his own people. And so among these candidates, this would be Kevin Warsh, Kevin Hassett, and others, but, and also Chris Waller, I think we talked about last week. Remember, I played you audio of him last week. He was on with, he was interviewed by one of the anchors of Fox News, Brett Baer. Remember that? And so these are all people who want the main gig, but now there's an opportunity to move them in now, by this Friday, in fact. So it's a current conversation as we think about interest rates and the economy, about inflation. Do we have Trump now? Are we ready? Yes. All right. So let's listen in. This is President Trump just this morning talking about the Fed, talking about the economy. Listen in.
A year ago, our country was dead. Now we have the hottest country anywhere in the world by far. And that was told to me by every leader of NATO, which they do whatever I want. That was told to me by the King of Saudi Arabia, by the leaders of UAE, by the leader of Qatar, by many, many. We were a dead country 1 year ago. Today we're the hottest country anywhere in the world, and I'm very happy to help.
And so President Trump, you can hear him. He is his own best spokesperson, even though, you know, we played the clip of him talking about Caroline Leavitt, his press secretary. But in truth, he's great. I think he's his best advocate, if you will, when specifically talking about the economy. And so he is out in front of this issue. Why? Because he is concerned about the economy and the news narrative. This is after last Friday and after he was, in fact, talking about those horrible job market labor numbers that we spent a lot of time talking about yesterday. And I know pretty much everybody here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT did so. So I won't bore you with all those details. But President Trump putting out there that he had the conversation just last night with his Treasury Secretary. And this is one of his right-hand people. And so on one hand, I think it was respectful to ask Scott Bessent, do you want this gig? And so it's like, no, I want to work with you. It's an honor to work with you. That was the word from Bessent, which I'm not surprised. So I think this was a formality. I think Trump already knew the answer, wanted to show the respect. But I think he has a great team, Howard Lutnick, Scott Bessent, the great people surrounding him. So I hope he does not make these changes. There are others who can step into this role. But that was one of the pieces of news that's breaking just this morning, that his Treasury Secretary says, no, I'm going to stay put right where I am. I think Trump is happy about that. What about immigration enforcement? Here's what Trump just told, and this is CNBC, as he's making the rounds on media interviews. Listen in as he talks about immigration enforcement.
They're looking for the criminals, the people that murdered. You know, we have 11,888 people that came into our country under Biden, under with our great czar, a border czar. She never called one. You know, she never called. She was a border czar. She never went to the border and she never made one call to the Border Patrol. You know, other than that, she did a great job. But they had hundreds of people that were murderers, 11,888 murders. 50% of which murdered more than one person in our country. We've already gotten a lot of them out, and some of them are so dangerous we don't want to bring them back. We want to put them in our own prison because we don't want them coming back. But they allowed 11,888 murderers, many of which murdered more than one, into our population, and we're getting them out rapidly.
But Mr. President, so on the issue of the Democratic Party, let's hear what he has to say about the state of the Democrats.
The Democrat Party is self-destructing. I mean, when you have low IQ people like Crockett, I wonder if she's in a relationship to the late, great Davy Crockett, who was a great gentleman. I wonder if she's got any relationship to Davy Crockett, the great old Davy Crockett. But you have this woman, Crockett. She's a very low IQ person. Somebody said the other day, she's one of the leaders of the party. I said, you got to be kidding. The Democrats are lost. They have Trump derangement syndrome so bad that they can't walk. They
well,
can't talk.
I mean.
They don't know where they're going. Schumer is finished. Schumer, look, I watched him the other day. He's lost all of his confidence.
So one thing that I notice with Trump right now is that he has his talking points he wants to get across. And if you'll notice, they're trying to break in there and interrupt and ask other questions or follow-ups. And he's not taking that. So this is a focus with Trump. Oftentimes when he's in person, you'll notice that somebody will ask a follow-up or kind of interject, and he's much more conversational and relaxed in some of those settings, like he was in Scotland or when he's in the Oval Office, does those interviews, etc. Not here. This is Trump on a mission, and he has his talking points, and they're not going to really divert him. And I love that. That's the way, if you're advising somebody as a media person, just this is my little media analysis for you. This is exactly where he wants to be. Focused, talking about the issues. And if they're kind of, trying to interject and ask about all these other things or talk about Epstein or whatever, nope, stay on point, please. The next one is talking about the grand jury probe into the Russia collusion hoax scandal. I've been reporting this morning that within the past, it happened late last night as I reported to you that there are wide reports now that Pam Bondi has now called for a criminal investigation into what happened with that Russia hoax and into the Obama administration officials and whether there was criminal activity. This involves a grand jury probe. It'll take some time to set that up. So we don't have a lot of the details. Obviously, it's CNBC. And as Trump makes the rounds, people want to break the news and get new details on this grand jury probe that is underway. So here's what President Trump had to say about that.
The Justice Department now tapping a grand jury to look into the intelligence community's assessment of what was happening with Russia. Is that you have nothing to do with directing the Justice Department?
No, I have nothing to do. Pam is doing a great job. I have nothing to do with it. I will tell you this. They deserve it. I was happy to hear it. I actually read it just like you did. I have nothing to do with it. But what they did in the election, what they did in even the last election, but it was too big to rig, but what they did in the 2020 election is grotesque.
And so in that one, he's very frank, talking, says it's all up to Pam Bondi. So he's confirming it. I still don't have all the details. And in truth, those details will unfold before us as they have to choose the grand jury, and there's a specific process they have to go through, and then they start looking through the material. So we'll follow that as the story unfolds. I believe that Fox News may have been among those first to break the story last night, I believe. And so I'm not positive with that because I was out last night, so I wasn't monitoring everything as closely as far as their air. Usually I try to even listen to it. So I'm not sure which show or who broke that. It may very well have been Hannity, but they actually obtained the letter from DOJ that would have been Pam Bondi. So we'll continue to follow that. But even if we had the details of the letter before us, the truth is they have to go through the grand jury process, right? And that's usually behind closed doors. And then when they bring forth any indictments, which they probably will, then that information is disclosed publicly and we'll get a greater sense of this. So we have Trump speaking out this morning. One of the stories that I loved, and I'll just tease this for you as well. Remember, Dr. Michael Bussler, he'll give us his take on all of this as far as what this means with the Fed, with an opening on the governor's board. That's not, by the way, that's not Jerome Powell's job. You know that, right? But it's an opportunity for a Trump person because we had two people, remember, that were dissenting against, and that's unusual. Usually the Fed, that board of 12, they usually have a consensus. And so you saw a split among them. And so that splintering is a little bit unusual. And so now would it be three? Would you have three? And so what, there's pressure within. So there's a little bit of a pressure cracking, if you will. President Trump also disclosed that at one point, J.P. Morgan Chase and the Bank of America rejected him as a customer. I thought, I don't know if we have that audio, but I think I find that pretty funny. And, you know, if you've ever had somebody reject you for a loan or rejecting you as a customer. And remember, we had heard in one of the meetings with Trump that they, you know, he had said that you should not face discrimination, because we've heard this from conservatives and conservative businesses. Even a couple years ago, remember the truckers in Canada when they were protesting and that they were felt discriminated against by the banking industry in Canada? And so that is something that is really creepy and scary and very George Orwell, if you will. And so, you know, he's speaking out about that and saying how wrong this is, that if you are a conservative or even on the other side, if you're a liberal, you should not face discrimination because of your politics, because of your political party or who you support for president. So that one is one that's trending on social media. When you think about the banking industry, I will say this to you, and I suspect you have felt this, that maybe you are in certain social situations where you don't want to say your politics, where you just don't want to speak in a political way, especially if you're applying for a job or a loan or something in a setting where you feel you may be discriminated against as a person who, maybe you're an independent, maybe you're a conservative, maybe you're a Trumpaholic like me. Like Amy invented the term Trumpaholic, I believe. And so we all say, well, I'm a Trumpaholic. We're going to celebrate the success of President Trump. But would you say that in the setting of, I don't know, applying for something like a loan at a bank or maybe a second mortgage or a home equity situation? My husband, Larry Menti, and I, we talk about this. It's the one kind of discrimination in America that's allowed. It's allowed. And that is not right. And that's why I think, in part, this Sidney Sweeney story that we're seeing, we'll get into Riley Gaines and the latest on this blue jean ad that has taken such an interesting political twist and another turn that we'll tell you about. But I think that's a piece of this. That conservatives in particular felt discriminated against. And who allowed that during the previous administration? I was thinking about this yesterday. When I think about the Biden administration, Joe Biden surprised a lot of us. When he came here to Philadelphia, I'll never forget it as long as I live. And this was a little over 2 years ago. And he was 2.5 years ago, right? He was in Philadelphia and we were down the Jersey Shore. And remember that, where he lit up Independence Hall with somebody did this with red lighting. One of my kids had said, hey, Darth Biden, remember that? And he had spoken about MAGA. He wasn't speaking about Trump. He wasn't speaking about an opposition candidate or an opposition party. This was the president of the United States of America. And he was speaking in a discriminating, ugly way about basically half the country. It was weird. It struck me as, wow, he was talking about those MAGA voters as if Republican voters were somehow evil, wrong, sinners. And then giving the rest of the country, I guess, permission to criticize you because of the political party you support or just who you may have voted for. Wow. That was crazy. That took us to a really dark place, and that's not okay. If you have felt like you have been discriminated from because of, and maybe you're a Democrat, Republican, whatever your politics, if you have felt that discrimination, I would love to hear from you. 855-839-1210. Maybe you were shadow banned on social media, but I'm really talking about in person, your kids' school, banking, shopping, someplace where you felt like, wow, I'm being discriminated right now because of my politics or a candidate I support. 855-839-1210. We have Dr. Michael Bussler will give us all the updates, his take on all things with regard to the economy, the grocery store, your housing, values. Thanks for being here, Dawn Stensland, at Dawn Stensland on social media, on Twitter, on X. Quick break. Be right.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Right back. Yeah, so by the way, when Trump was speaking out, we'll get to this, but when President Trump was actually speaking out this morning on CNBC, and this is the power of Trump and why you got to be careful, there were some bank stocks that dipped because he was talking about debanking. Remember the story that there were hundreds of conservatives across the country, especially business people, and some of you called in. We had calls that we were taking from around the country where people said, yeah, this happened to me, where there was this level of, quote unquote, intimidation. I also read yesterday, and this is something that I was talking to a friend about. She is an executive at one of the big banks, and she said how all of these big corporations are getting rid of these DEI requirements, these DEI policies that were really expensive. Because during the Biden administration, you were required to create these DEI, not just hires, but an entire department. And so you have to take it from one place, right, to then make space for the so-called DEI, you know, department. Now, have we gotten rid of that in government, local government? No, it still exists. We've talked about it. Montgomery County, especially, they've just created recently some high paid six-figure positions, at least one or two that I know of, and Philadelphia as well. And so will they keep these departments and how will they evolve? I mean, I'm all for diversity of thought, but I wish it would stand for diversity education. You know, instead of equity, unless they're talking about building your equity financially, you know what I mean, investment-wise, equity is usually a term that to me is a financial term. And so when they say diversity, equity, inclusion, okay, let's be inclusive. Let's include everybody in the conversation. Okay, diversity, yeah, let's have a diverse group of people with a diverse level of thought. Okay, I'm good with that. But equity, see, a lot of people confuse equity with equality. And that's a real problem. So it should either be diversity, equality, inclusion, okay. Or if you're talking about equity, then to me that involves investment. To me, that's more of an investment term. You can tell me if you have thoughts on it. 855-839-1210 as we move forward today. And I also want to get to the latest, and I know I have to watch the time because we have Dr. Michael Busler ahead, but I do want to get to the latest numbers as far as the grocery store. My husband, Larry Menti, went to three different grocery stores and was talking about prices. So we'll get to all of that in just a moment, as well as Dr. Michael Busler, Stockton University ahead. But, you know, summertime, it's here. Keeping your home cool and efficient is paramount. And that's why I had my guys, Marvin E. Cans Heating and Air Conditioning, out to get our AC unit summer ready. So glad I did. Take my advice. Get your AC unit serviced this summer. And if Marvin E. Cans feels that your unit needs to be replaced, they're going to give you an honest assessment at a fair price. And they'll install a high-efficiency train AC unit, TRANE. Hard to stop a train, as they say. Just visit my guys, Marvin E. Cans, KANZE.com. Marvin E. Cans, tell them Dawn sent.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
You. So as President Trump is touting his strong economy, trying to, I think, put out and lead the news narrative to offset some of the negative news, especially that we saw on Friday with those job numbers, and really talk up the tariff talk with China, etc., talking about the Fed and his latest opportunity to choose a new governor. And then as well, thinking about President Trump. And before we get to Dr. Michael Busler, listen to President Trump as he's talking about this issue of, quote unquote, debanking. In other words, based on whether or not you are a conservative, a Democrat, an independent. I think we can all agree that you would hope that businesses and banks, financial institutions, should not discriminate against anybody. So here's Trump talking about this.
About executive order, what's in that? And what do you think the banks have done?
Well, they did discriminate. I had J.P. Morgan Chase. I had hundreds of millions of dollars in cash. I could see if they want to, if they want to do something bad because you don't have any money and you're defaulted and you're this. They took people out, but I'll give you me as an example. I had hundreds of millions. I had many, many accounts loaded up with cash. I was loaded up with cash, and they told me, I'm sorry, sir, we can't have you. You have 20 days to get out. I said, you got to be kidding. I've been with you for 35, 40 years. They said, I didn't know what to do with it. And I went to, and you could ask him, maybe he's not going to admit it. So I said, I was informed by my people that we have to get out of Chase Manhattan. That's Jamie and J.P. Morgan Chase. So I said, I can't believe it. Well, I was never in this situation before. I've never had anything like it. And it's not like, gee, you defaulted on a loan. Geez, if I could understand that, that's different. But there's no default. I mean, there's nothing but cash. I have a really great company. And then what happens is I call up Bank of America routinely, because when I was president, this was after I got out, by the way, I call up Bank of America routinely, and I speak to him, and I speak to a couple of people, and they have zero interest. Brian was kissing my ass when I was president, and when I called him after I was president to deposit $1 billion plus and a lot of other things, more importantly to open accounts, which banks always like. They like accounts because they get interest free, the overnights and things, a lot of reasons for it, but they like accounts. I had hundreds of accounts, and he said, we can't do it. No, we can't do it. So I went to another one. I ended up going to small banks all over the place. I mean, I was putting $10 million here, $10 million there, did $5 million, $10 million, $12 million. I have them all over the place, the craziest thing. And it's lucky I even had them. They were doing me a favor. And that's because the banks discriminated against me very badly. And I was very good to the banks. I had the greatest economy in the history of our country when I was president. And by the way, our economy now will blow that away. And you see it happening. But our economy now, because we're a rich country again, because of our trade deals, we've become a rich country again. But no, they totally discriminate against, I think me maybe even more, but they discriminate against many conservatives. I told that story and sitting around tables with other people that were conservative or Trump supporters. I think the word might be Trump supporters more than conservative. And I believe what they did is they went to the regulators. Banks are not afraid of anything but a regulator. They're regulators and their wives. They're more afraid of their wives than the regulators. But the group they're really afraid of is bank regulators. And I believe that Biden or Kamala, and I don't think they're smart enough to do it, but the people that are surrounding the beautiful resolute desk, the high IQ people that are radical left, I believe they told the banking commission, the bankers, that the banking regulators, do everything you can to destroy Trump. And that's what they did. And guess what? I'm president. How did that happen?
That's only because of the patriots who support Trump. That was a fascinating man. My follow up on that one is more about the wife. When I get home, I got to ask my husband, Larry Menti, are you afraid of me? Because I have a feeling we hear this about Melania, that she's the rule follower and kind of strict with some things. So, wow, that piece of it is fascinating. I have to say, as the follow up, because I looked this up, because obviously the stocks for J.P. Morgan and Bank of America dipped while Trump was making these comments this morning. And as well, J.P. Morgan, they have issued a statement denying that they ever targeted conservatives or Trump supporters for, quote unquote, debanking. I don't see a statement from Bank of America yet. I suspect it's incoming. Let's get the reaction from our very own, our friend, my favorite professor locally, and this is Dr. Michael Busler. Professor Busler, how are you, Michael? Good to have you here again.
I'm doing very well, Dawn. Thanks for having me. It's always my pleasure to be here. And you have some very interesting things to talk about today.
Yeah, I was kind of fascinated with, you know, fearing your wife. I wish my husband, see, I'm too much of a softie. That's just it. I wish my husband feared me a little. I don't think he fears me, but that was a funny comment.
Yeah, it certainly was. Listen, if this is true, that banks wouldn't do business with people who were Trump supporters or conservatives, that's horrible. It hurts the bank, and worse, it hurts all the people that are trying to develop a good banking relationship with a good bank who just happen to be Trump supporters. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be blind to that sort of thing. They look at customers, they evaluate their financial statements and determine whether they want to do business with them or not in whatever capacity. But it has nothing to do with your political beliefs. It's not supposed to have anything to do with any demographic characteristics. It's just supposed to be numbers on a piece of paper and how the banks evaluate the credit worthiness if you're looking for a loan or the amount of business that should be done. If this is true, and based on what some of the things that happened during the Biden administration, I guess it could be true. But if it's true, this is horrible, absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
And the banks shouldn't get away with this.
Yeah, so I know that there were some lawsuits over time that we'll continue to follow that storyline. But I know, for Jamie Dimon, I know that those banks have denied this. You know, this morning we see, all the stories, the fallout, if you will. Dow Jones looks like it fell. The headline, and I'm just looking at one of the financial channels. This happens to be CNBC. The Dow falling as traders assess weaker than expected economic data and new tariff comments from President Trump. And so these are slight numbers, but what do you see as you look at the outlook, the Fed, the Board of Governors, splitting with each other? That was unusual, not unanimous in their vote. And then as well, what happened with those job numbers and the firing of the, jobs chief, if you will, for the Bureau of Labor Statistics?
Yeah. So let's start with that, with the jobs numbers and the removing of the person who's in charge of all this. Economists, data analysis, politicians, analysts, everybody needs as accurate data as possible. Now, we understand that all of this data is taken from a sample. I mean, they can't ask every business in the country, how many people did you hire? They take a statistically significant sample and they reach conclusions. And if it's done properly, 95% of the time, you should be fairly close to what the actual number is. These job numbers are horrible. You may recall during Biden administration, right after the recently fired commissioner was first appointed, she was approved by the Senate in January of 2023. Right after that, starting in March 2023 and going to March of 2024, all of the numbers were way off. And we didn't find that out until August of 2024, when they revised the job numbers down over 800,000 jobs. You can't make that big of a mistake if you do things properly. Either their sampling techniques aren't right or they're taking the wrong samples. But look, they have PhD economists. The person that was just fired is a PhD mm-hmm. economist. They all know how to do this properly. We can't possibly have this. Every economist I talked to and what I read said it was a bad thing Trump did firing this person from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Frankly, I think he did the right thing. Somebody who's the commissioner and top, they're responsible to make sure this data is correct. The prior commissioner said, well, I think this horrible that you fired her. Look, she really is not involved in it. She doesn't see it until the end, and then she makes her comments. Well, that's even more horrible.
Yeah, I agree.
She doesn't see it until the end. She's supposed to monitor this. They have PhD economists there who know how to do this stuff.
Yeah.
There's no way that those numbers should have been off as far as they were. And now we've been Trump has been harping on Jerome Powell for the last couple of months to cut interest rates. He said, well, there are 140,000 jobs added in May, another so many in 100,000 in April. We didn't quite get the June job numbers yet. He said, well, the job market's strong. Now they came out and revised it and said 10 or 15,000 jobs were added in each of those months. Had he had that data, that correct data, when they met back in March and April and May, they would have cut interest rates by now. So it's horrible that the government is producing data like this that is so far off that it just throws all the policymakers off and all the decision makers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, business, when they decide, well, what do I think the economy is going to do? Should we expand or not? You know, they look at all this data, too. So it has to be as accurate as possible. So firing that person who was in charge, mm-hmm. I think, was the right thing to do. Now, the other part of your question was, how does the economy look? So we usually measure economic activity by how much the economy is growing and how much GDP changes. Now, the first quarter, we had negative growth. It was due to a couple things, people buying more imports because they're afraid of the tariffs. And when you buy imports, actually subtracts from GDP. But the second quarter, exports shot way up. And the second quarter, we had a 3% growth rate. The jobs numbers and the growth rates aren't consistent. In the first quarter, I said we had negative growth and we had a lot of jobs being added. Well, how could that be? If the economy is contracting, how could you be adding hundreds of thousands of jobs? On the other hand, in the second quarter of this year, GDP grew at 3%. Now they're telling us that they only added 10, 15,000 jobs a month. So you ask me, how's the economy, and I have to look at data to try to figure that out, I'm not sure what to say.
Yeah.
I mean, based on GDP growth, things look good. Based on the job numbers, things don't look so hot.
Yeah, and that's just, you know, to your point overall, I'll say in any business, if something big like that happens, somebody gets thrown under the bus, and it's usually the head person. I've just,
exactly.
In my experience, you know,
Exactly.
For anybody with experience, I would say this, that, you know, they talked about their formula, that it's been off ever since COVID. But what my suggestion was, think about the weather. You know, you watch your local weather and the way the meteorologists get away with it, like my friend Kathy or meteorologist, they give or Sue Serio, they give the tracks. You know, you got the European track. Here's what it's showing with the weather. And then you've got the so-and-so track, right? And they give like three different tracks. Why not do something like that to say this is where we're looking at this? And that way you have a range, if you will, but just be transparent about it.
Exactly. So with the weather, a number of different forecasting countries and agencies have different models that they use. And they develop the model based on their interpretation of analyzing what happened in the past. So if a front's moving in a certain direction, well, 9 times out of 10, it's going to do this. So they make their forecast. So the models are different, and that's okay. But as you say, if the Bureau of Labor Statistics can't come up with an accurate model, try to look at somebody else. You know, there is another forecast of jobs. ADP, a private company, puts out their forecast. And when the Bureau of Labor Statistics in the last couple of months were saying hundreds of thousands of jobs were added, ADP was saying, no, it's only 25, 30,000. I thought, how could ADP be so off? Well, it turns out they weren't. ADP was pretty close to accurate, and the federal government was off. It's impossible to try to set policy and try to determine what's going to happen in the future, at least your forecast of the future, unless you have accurate data to work from. So whatever they have to do, use multiple models, change the sampling, change the sample size. There's a lot of things you can do statistically. Why hasn't it been done, especially since this last commissioner appointed in January of 2023, with so many errors, why hasn't she made changes to this? And as you say, you get something this bad, the person at the top goes. Get somebody else in there.
You know, one of the pieces of news that, and I find this fascinating, I don't think, I'll say this, I don't think most Americans realized until the pandemic that most of your prescription medications that most people take come from overseas, and especially China. And that's when a lot of people said, you know, for these essential things, why don't we make these here in this country? So one of the headlines from this morning was that Trump had said that these tariffs over the years may be imposed on the big companies, you know, whether you talk about Pfizer, Eli Lilly, Johnson & Johnson, et cetera, that they could go to 250%. In other words, Trump is trying to incentivize these pharmaceutical companies to make the medications here rather than overseas. It's one of, you know, what he's trying to do. You know, I glanced at like the earnings of a Pfizer. I mean, it's oh my gosh,
phenomenal.
Wow. And so what do
billions
you
billions of billions of dollars.
Wow.
Phenomenal. And look, they said and the way they price these drugs is they charge the American market a very high price because the American market, I suppose, they feel can pay it. They like to sell it all around the world. Well, these poorer countries can't afford to buy at the same price, so they charge an extremely low price to all of those countries, and the U.S. consumer, the U.S. Citizens have to pay this higher price. Now, Trump said no more of that. You have to charge Americans what you charge the lowest other customer. What that's going to do, it'll bring drug prices down in the U.S., and it will raise drug prices to some of these other countries. But there's no reason why we have to pay so much for medication. And then the drug companies said, well, look, if we make the drugs in China, where they pay people a dollar an hour, we don't have to make them in the U.S. We pay people $30, $40 an hour. It's much cheaper. So that's good. But yet they don't pass that along because they charge the Americans higher prices. Personally, I'd rather pay a little more for the drug if I had to, as long as I know it's available when I need it. Mm-hmm. And that's the most important thing.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, Pfizer, just for the record, because I'm looking it up, their shares were up 2% pre-market. They just posted quarterly results that beat expectations by the analysts. So that revenue, this is just this quarter, $14.65 billion. Holy
yeah,
Lord.
They have higher profit. If you measure, you know, what's a fair profit? Well, if you measure what their return on their equity is or what their return on their total assets is. So if you look at those numbers, every one of those are higher than the average manufacturing company. You can conclude then that they are making excessive profits, and it's on the backs of the American public, which I think is horrible.
Yeah, and so this morning, as we think about the economy and these job numbers, so I guess the July jobs report also confirms that, you know, the same, a slow growth.
Yes.
Even though we, you know, another one of the headlines was that we added, you know, the 73,000 jobs.
Right.
But when you look at the total package here, is part of the uncertainty the fact that there's still this ongoing, very public negotiation, especially with China? And is that the piece of it? Once they get that piece in place, things will stabilize and be able to predict a little better?
Well, I think the more of these agreements, now China's obviously a very large one. We got to have the European Union one, although they're tweaking it a little bit. But once these bigger ones all come into line, I think things will stabilize a bit. You know, you said, well, the latest report says we added 73,000 jobs in July. How do you know that's accurate?
I know.
How do you know if that's the right number? Is it more than that? Is it less than that? See, the problem is we've lost confidence in the Bureau of Labor statistics. And that's what Trump wants to do. He wants to restore confidence, and he wants them to come out with numbers that are reasonably close to what the actual numbers are. So we take a look at all that. How's the economy doing? Well, if we're growing at 3%, I don't know how many jobs we're adding because we can't get an accurate number, but we're growing at 3%, which is nice, healthy growth. I think with Trump having done a lot of deregulation and a lot of encouraging foreign investment and large amounts of foreign investment coming into the country, I think we're on the right track to have the economy continue to grow. I said when Trump was elected, I'm extremely optimistic about the economy going forward. And even though the job numbers are whatever they are, I still maintain that the economy will be very good going forward. And the economy will provide opportunities to every well-prepared American. And that's really what the government's function is, among other things. But they should be able to provide opportunity. So instead of giving people handouts, give people opportunity to earn their own money, to buy their own things. And that's what Trump's view is. Let's expand the economy and make sure every American has opportunity. The ones that aren't well prepared, let's work on some of these jobs programs and training programs so that people can take advantage of the opportunities that Trump is about to provide them.
Dr. Michael Bussler, we always have confidence in you. Stockton University, you're just great. I look forward to next time. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. I look forward to it, too.
Thank you, Michael. Hey, we got to talk about my friends at Piazza Auto Group. Yeah, whether you're hitting the beach, maybe cruising through the city this summer, why not do it in style? The Honda Summer of Style and Performance event, it's going on right now at my favorite Honda dealers. Piazza Honda, right now is the time to get behind the wheel of a new Honda Civic, Accord, or maybe a CRV. That's what my husband just got, a new CRV. He loves it. And what about those unbeatable lease deals? That's what I got on my HRV Honda. Low finance rates as well. But hurry, these summer savings, they're not going to last. Drive to Piazza Honda of Philadelphia, Langhorne, Pottstown, Reading, or Springfield. Do this today. You can always go online, piazzahonda.com, P-I-A-Z-Z-A, piazzahonda.com. Tell them Dawn sent you. We have Kim Ward coming up. We will update you on all things Trump, the economy as well. We'll talk about some developing stories in Pennsylvania and across our region. Stay right there. And as well, why are young women, why do they want to date a guy who can fix stuff? It's a new dating site that, I don't know, it just fascinates me that women want a guy who's good with his hands. So we'll have that debate as well. You're going to love this one. The Dawn Show continues right after this.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.